Hey, you are now tuned in to Culture Zine Radio Network, where urban culture lives.
You just don't know what you do to me.
Give me all the chicken heads from Pasadena to Medina. Bet big, get in between your dentists. The prognosis, doses, blends and bends like Twizzlers. Biggest fitness to hurt, what's under that skirt? Who filling them with octane? Got them gassed up, about to get blasted up, son. The last one, heard the mother, brother, miss him. I seen it when he kissed him at the wake, made his body shake. The high guy is 8-bit, the eyes smoke, pink, rap, terror, four chrome, and terror. Five by deliverance, the fifth is conspicuous. Bad boy, 6 to 95, ridiculous. My rap lines is like landmines. One step, kaboom, black suit filled the room. So who may make it serve, Junior Mafia to click?
Junior Mafia.
I have my honey total bustle.
That's right.
In the middle of the day now, baby, I seem to think of only you.
Welcome to Culture Zine Radio. Tonight we're doing Inside the Game. We got a lot of special guests tonight. starting with my man right here, Alonzo Robinson. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, man, what's going on, man? How you been?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. I'm blessed to have, you know, this round table of artists and songwriters and executives explain publishing to these young cats and really get
wonderful,
into
wonderful.
It.
Wonderful, man. Well, what do you want to know? I mean, you know,
Go
ahead.
Let me bring on this other guest, Ebony. It's my sister, Ebony Burke. I mean, she's a fantastic writer. What's up, Ebony?
Hi, how you doing? Hello, everyone.
I'm good. Of course, y'all know each other, Alonzo. This is Ebony Burke.
Hello, Ms. Burke. How are you?
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Good, good.
We're going to get into some serious conversation tonight. We're going to talk about some things. I'm definitely going to play some records from you guys' careers and things that you guys either, you know, did some A&R on or some executive or wrote. Livy O'Harris will be calling in later on tonight, a couple other people. But let's get into it. Explain, first of all, from the point of ASCAP, what a songwriter is, my brother, what that is.
Well, basically, a songwriter is somebody that creates a composition for either for themselves or for other people, and those people take that composition, record it, and then what you do is put it out and play it, hopefully it gets played on the radio, and they start to see some kind of income from it. That's what a songwriter is. That's what they do. They create compositions.
Okay. And feel free to jump in at any time. We do a roundtable here. I had a question. Somebody tweeted me a question. They want to know, how hard is it to sit down and create a song for a specific subject? Like, say, they want you to write a song for a soundtrack and they give you a subject. How hard is that, Ev?
Well, I mean, it depends on the situations. I know for me, it really helps that I'm with a really, really good producer, a talented producer, someone I can gel with. And we normally, if it's a project that we really don't have and, you know, have never worked on before, something new, we can kind of bounce off ideas together. Those type of things, you know, they're easier, you know, to write versus, you know, kind of doing a spec type of thing where you, you know, somebody sends you a track and then you have a subject to write for, you know, that's a lot harder, I know, for me. So, you know, it's difficult. It just depends on you as a person, and it depends on who you're writing with. And, you know, if you guys can kind of bounce ideas off of each other and kind of work together, it might make it a little bit easier.
Okay, I'm going to do so. I want you guys to go into, you know, a little bit of your resume so people know you're not just, you know, somebody that just be drummed up. Definitely, Alonzo, and then Sister, you go next.
Oh, cool, okay. Well, I mean, as you know, Jake, I'm in the Midwest right now. I'm working on a film, doing the music, and I'm executive producing this new film called The Color of People. And basically, my history, just to go back about 20 years at ASCAP on the West Coast, you know, working with a little bit of everybody, too many names to get into, but responsible for, you know, some of the old heads that you guys probably still listen to, like Cypress Hill and New Edition and NWA and Snoop and the Dog Pound and, you know, all those hip-hop artists from back in the 90s and in the early 2000s. So I was very instrumental in helping them get their publishing and all their stuff set up so they could go out and get the publishing deals that they were trying to do, and a few of them got signed from some introductions that I was able to help make with some of them, and just really just kind of helping cats kind of really understand, you know, the business. As you know, ASCAP being my CSAC, all performing rights organizations, and basically what they do, especially for your young listeners and new writers, it's a way for them to kind of get in and meet and network with people. So I really encourage everyone who is listening and who is songwriters and producers or beat makers or, you know, cats that just really want to learn the business. ASCAP provides great opportunities. They're always hiring. They got a great intern program. Just ask them about it. It's just a really great organization. I started as an intern up there, and it went on to last over 20 years with them. I'm now doing my own thing. Magi Entertainment, a new media group, is a production company. We help artists get established. We help them, of course, with their publishing and making contacts with people on the publishing side of the world, as well as people on the record side of the world, and also help people with music and film. Do a little bit of that. That's why I'm here in the Midwest right now working on a project. And just overseeing the music aspect of it and working with the producers and the directors and trying to get the right feel for the soundtrack, as well as bringing in the right artists to work on the project. So that's what I'm doing right now. That's what I'm currently doing. Got my hands in a few other things, but it's a little bit different than music, but still working very closely with artists, just trying to help them, you know, just establish self in the business, you know, with the three performing rights organizations. That's what I'm doing right now.
That's wonderful.
You next, just explain so they know who your pedigree is.
I started off on the artist side. I was with, I don't know if people remember Soul Life Records. Soul Life started the careers of Sunshine Anderson and Anthony Hamilton, as well as Christina Milian. And I started there, and then from there I did a major publishing deal with, at the time, was Windswept, and then they changed to Bug. And just from there, just kind of things took off, and I was able to do a lot of stuff with Bad Boy, D5. I did stuff with Arista, Blue Cantrell, and, you know, a couple movies, Hair Show with Monique, and New York Minute with the Olsen Twins, and done a lot of stuff with Wu-Tang, Casey and JoJo, Tony Braxton. And, here recently I did Lemonade Mouth, which is a Disney film. Wrote the single for that. Doing a lot of dance and house, kind of crossed over there. And a lot of singles over there with different DJs, DJ Borello, Euro Club Hits.
These are players. These are people that wrote these songs, made these. I'm going to get into your song in a minute, the one that you did for Hair Show. I know you got some other stuff coming. I want to get into some of these things. How important is it for writers, and both of you guys, I want you to answer this, is it for writers to get involved with these writing organizations and understand what these organizations do? And, by the way, brother, can you explain what these organizations actually do? Because a lot of young artists that I run into say, man, I don't need that right now. I'm not ready. Can you explain to them how important it is at the beginning to get into these situations? And then, sister, I want you to give your point of view.
Now, did you want me to go first, or did you want the sister
to
go first? Sister?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, I mean, it's very important. I mean, especially if you're starting out, if you're a new writer, and you're trying to break in and you're trying to create some relationships and trying to, depending on really where you are too, if you're in some of the hot spots like Atlanta, New York, L.A., it's very instrumental in getting to these organizations, just taking a meeting with them, let them get to know you, finding out what they do. Now, when I was with ASCAP, you know, we did a lot of workshops and seminars, and we were very instrumental in creating the Rhythm and Soul Awards, which I was a very big part of in helping create that and moving that forward. But it's very important because these organizations are probably, I always say, they're the first line of defense that you come into when you try to come into the business. Now, yeah, you meet people through certain camps and you go through studios in your local area. But one thing I can say about the organizations, especially the PROs, is that they're very instrumental in helping you get to that next level, meeting people. You know, it's very, very important to be a part of these organizations because that's how you get paid. You know, once your song starts to get played on the radio and you start to generate some airplay, then that actually translates into dollars for you as well. So you want to make sure that you have a relationship with those executives at those offices so you can find out what's the next thing happening, what are they working on, what do they know about, what events do they have coming up where you can network. So it's very instrumental, and I think it is imperative for artists to be a part of those organizations.
Okay.
ASCAP was was very instrumental in my career. They have a lot of workshops. I met a lot of people, you know, being with ASCAP. And so it's
mm-hmm.
really
yep.
important. And, you know, I would suggest, I get a lot of people asking, you know, which PRO is better. And I'd have to say, you know, since 1999, you know, this was even before I, you know, I started really being able to write on these major projects. I had, you know, started with ASCAP, and I don't think mm-hmm. I would go anywhere else. So, you know, and there's so much more now than there was before that, you know, because I think even now the I Create Music Expo, mm-hmm. they didn't have that in the beginning when I started. So,
No. It's a very good networking opportunity. You just really get a chance to meet a lot of people. She's very right. She, you know, you meet a lot of people, and you're able to participate in a different type of environment. The energy's different than,
yeah.
you know, just
mm-hmm.
hanging out with the homies, you know what I'm saying, with cats that you see every day. So you get a chance to really kind of, you know, flex your creative muscle and your music muscle when you go to events like that. So she's very right. So, yes, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm going to definitely drop your song that you did for Hair Show, and then when we come back, we're going to pay some bills, and we'll get into a conversation on how do you get involved with these organizations? How do you make these things work? And we also got to talk about, you know, what the difference is between songwriting and producers and understanding what this publishing means and all these things, so these kids really get a good grasp of what we're trying to get here. A lot of kids don't understand how to write songs and all those other things. So we got some work to do, people. I appreciate y'all coming on. This is Inside the Game, where urban culture lives. Culture Scene Radio. Ebony, please introduce this song, this Let's Love, Let's Live song. Let's Leave song.
Oh, that one. Let's Leave.
Yes.
This is Let's Leave. It's a scene from the movie Hair Show when Monique is leaving her hometown and she's coming to L.A. So I believe that's the scene, yeah, when she's at LAX.
Are you an artist, DJ, or dancer? Have you been looking for a chance to prove your talent to the world with no luck? Well, look no further. Join us for the next To Blow $50,000 National Talent Search. Two lucky contestants will go home with a cash prize of $50,000 and a single deal with a major recording company. Our judges represent some of the largest record labels, including Universal, Island Records, Def Jam Recordings, Atlantic Records, Concord Music Group, After Eden Records, and Interscope. The next To Blow talent search will be coming to a state near you, but slots are limited and will not last long. So register today at www.thenexttoblow.com. That's T-H-E-N-E-X-T, the number 2-B-L-O-W.com. Don't miss out, because you could be next.
What's up, guys? This is Coaching Radio, where urban culture lives. Man, I'm sorry about that. It looked like everybody's call dropped. Thank you for staying with us. Lonzo, man, let's talk. Oh, matter of fact, let me introduce Christopher Warrior, a great writer in his own, young, up-and-coming great writer. How you doing, Chris? Welcome to the show.
Good.
Ab, you still with me, Ab?
I'm still here. Yeah. I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about that, sweetie. Yeah, that was a song that, well, Ab, tell them. That was a song for?
That was Let's Leave. That was from Hair Show film. And I believe that song was in the scene where Monique leaves and comes to L.A. to start her new life.
I got an important question for all of you, and all of you are going to give me different answers, which is great. I got a text. Somebody asked me, how hard is it to get your music placed in either a soundtrack or a video game or something like that? How hard and how important is that to your career?
How difficult is it?
Yes, let's, Eb, go first. Ladies first, I'll be
honest. It's not easy because, you know, the songwriting and publishing game is kind of different now than what it used to be. So everybody is trying to really now, they're like, okay, well, if I can't really get a record on this artist, at least I can do film and TV and video games. So you've even got some of the really big writers who were doing really big records who are now trying to, you know, get it in television and film. So it's, you know, it's difficult. I mean, I'm there now, too. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know what, it's really easy because it's not, you know. And it takes a lot of work, and you got to get out there. You got to network with a lot of music supervisors. You know, if you're with ASCAP, you definitely need to go to these workshops, and people need to know who you are and hear your music and, you know, and see what you can do. And you got to be able to have a lot of different music so that you could, you know, do an audio commercial, or maybe you could have a record in this, you know, this movie about this or that. You know, you got to kind of it's a lot of work. So, you know, that's just my opinion. It's a lot of work. You can do it, but it's a lot of footwork.
From a producer's perspective, Warrior, yeah, from a producer's perspective, Warrior, because I want to save the big gun for last, because he's going to have to tell us how to do it from the corporate side. I don't want to interrupt that. But Warrior, from a producer and a songwriter side, definitely tell us how difficult it is to place.
Actually, you know, in my experience, it depends on the quality of the music, and it also just depends on the relationships that you build. So, a lot of cases, when I talk to game companies, they're just not going to accept unsolicited material. In some cases, game companies already have relationships with publishing companies, and so you have to submit your material to that publishing company that they're affiliated with in order to get a placement. Or you have to give up a large percentage of a piece of your publishing in order to get the relationship. You know, so there's always a little bit of give and take. But, take and take. It's some take and take. But I think the number game, like if you can place quantity, you can do okay economically. You can make a good check, but the checks have been cut in half, you know, ever since Spotify, since digital has taken over. You know, the royalty checks, even the licensing fees are cut in half. Unless you're going through like a major, then they can demand what they want, because they just have that relationship. That's been my experience.
Mr. Robinson, sir, you have the floor. I agree. I definitely agree. It's a rough job. Mr. Robinson, sir, I know you have the floor.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's definitely a lot more difficult than it used to be, but it's not impossible. And the reason I say that is you can go to some of these independent music clearinghouses that all they do, and I used to work for one. I was a vice president for one for a couple months where I helped them set up their organization. But basically, there are these song houses, small publishing houses that are probably independently ran by maybe one or two people, and all they do is put music in film and television. And what I was able to do and find out just from working at this particular company is there's a list of music publishing houses, very small, not, you know, Universal, EMI, and some of the bigger ones that we know of and people use all the time. And those guys are expensive anyway. But they're the small ones that you can get in with, and basically it really is about networking with your PRO, because a lot of your PROs know the supervisors. So ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC, the guys that work there, because they have two sides. They have the television and film side, and then they also have the music side, which a lot of artists know about. You know, that's the ones they go in and they join and they meet those people. But they're also a television and film side. And those are the people you want to meet too, because they will tell you all the music supervisors that are in the game. And they'll also let you know about the small music houses that are constantly looking for independent material, because a lot of the films, especially today's films, like the films I'm working on here in the Midwest, I mean, the budget for this film is only $100,000. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a lot of money. You know what I mean, compared to some of the big blockbusters. But I'm going to be very instrumental in probably taking a new writer and giving them an opportunity to have their song, you know, in this film and take it from there. So, you know, that's what I focus on. You know, it's definitely different, but it's not impossible.
Okay. It's not impossible. That's not impossible, but you can give up something. And do definitely
do.
I placed about 7 songs this year. About 7 in television. And the licenses are probably, they're almost about $2,000 a piece.
Yeah.
Close to it.
$2,500 sometimes in some of them, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, I end up having to, like, if you have co-writers and you guys live with the co-writer, you know, then the company wants,
yeah.
You know, company wants a piece. I even had a situation with a company that was working with E-Television, where they were like, well, the production company wants a piece, and we want a piece for giving it to the production company, and then the network says that they want a piece. So I was like, this deal isn't really worth it, because I'm going to end up with like 25% at the end of the day. Now, I would probably saturate TV with, you know, 45 different pieces of music, and so it looks okay.
Yeah.
But back in the day, it was just, you know, it was your money, and they didn't try to take your money. So I definitely
see
networks. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no. What I'm saying is it's changed, because now, you know, with the 360 deals that exist, you know, that's kind of carried over, because right now, you know, our industry is suffering. We went from a $16 billion business to like a $6 billion business. That's a major hit. You know what I'm saying? That's a major hit. From $16 billion, you know, in the 90s, in all the way up to, I would say, 2005, we were a $16-17 billion business. And to go from there to a $5 to $6 billion business, and I think we're coming back. But what you're seeing in the industry is the revenue streams. There's more revenue streams, but the money's less. And I had a manager that manages a pretty popular songwriter, and he called me 2 weeks ago, and he was going to just 2 places to pick up a $100,000 check. Now he's got to go to 5 places to pick up the same amount of money. You
right,
know what I mean?
Exactly.
So that's what's going on, and that's what's changing in the industry. But we also have to let the young people know that are listening, hey, look, we love that you love the music, just pay for it. You know what I'm saying?
That's
and
it.
The problem with it is the young kids that are listening to music today are not paying for the music. And you can, and it'd be interesting to ask your audience, how much music are they paying for, and where are they getting their music from? And the only reason I say that is I have an 8-year-old and a 16-year-old. And I was in a Starbucks with a very popular and high-up senior vice president of one of the PRO companies, and we were having coffee talking about our next deal. And these kids came in, and they were pulling on their mom's jacket. It's a quick story. They were pulling on their mom's jacket, and they were pointing at this guy. And, you know, I'm always, you know, looking for that next big thing. So we're looking at this guy, regular guy, you know, dressed down. He just got out of bed. He's in there. And all these kids were coming in, and they were like trying to get this guy's autograph. So he wasn't a musician. He wasn't Britney Spears. He wasn't Justin Bieber. We know those guys. So, you know, after all these, about five, six kids went up to this guy. So after the kids left, I went up to the guy, and I said, man, you know, I don't mean to be rude, but, you know, what do you do? You know, because I see all these kids trying to get your autograph. And he told me he has a YouTube page. And all he does is break windows and cars out of cars. He smashes stuff. And he's got like 15 million followers. So, I'm telling you, that is what is happening out there. Now, if you, I mean, what? Ask your audience, and I'm just saying, it's crazy where now, and I have an article I can send you guys. I think I posted it on Facebook about YouTube being the next big thing, as far as where you get, you know, your money. And YouTube is paying. They're not paying much. I think they're paying like half a cent or something like that.
Right.
You've got 15 million people. My son,
right.
Another quick story. My son, 16 years old, YouTube all day, every day, unless I take the phone away from him. He just got a new iPhone 6S, so he's crazy right now with it. And all he does is watch these guys. I think they're the Dublin guys or the Dublin brothers, and all they do is smash expensive cars, fly them out of planes, break them. But the guy's got 45 million followers.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Guys,
so that's what you're up against. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off track.
No, this is open format. This is real. Hold on one second, guys. Right. Hold on, guys. Let me introduce this. This is my boss over at Universal. This is RC. This is Mr. Cooley. How you doing, brother? This is my brother and my boss.
Good,
so
how you guys
now
doing,
see
man?
You all.
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Good to see you too. Good to talk to you too, sir. Hello, gentlemen.
How you guys doing?
Hello.
Hey, man. What's happening?
I'm sorry, gentlemen and lady. I'm sorry, darling. I'm sorry. What's going on, fellas?
He's also a very good songwriter. Introduce yourself. Let people know. So, I mean, I love that you guys come on and you guys are willing to talk to these young artists and give advice and answer these crazy questions that they ask. So. For me, it's a pleasure to have you guys come on and do these things for these kids.
Thank you. Well, let me just introduce myself. My name is Rashawn Cooley Carrier. I am Vice President of A&R for After Eden Records / Universal. I'm also Senior Executive Director of A&R for Universal Concord, and I'm co-chairman of a production company called the Transformers Music Group, where we have a lot of producers and writers and stuff like that. So that's a little bit about me. I actually started as a songwriter for Atlantic Records for about 3 years, and then I got an internship and kind of took off from there, and the rest has been history. So,
awesome. Nice.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Somebody texted me a question, and they want to know, what's the benefit of such things like SoundCloud and situations like that compared to trying to get someone to listen to your music rather than sending them this CD or this music? You can send them to your SoundCloud page. What do you guys feel about that?
The good thing about, like I said, the internet has made it even stronger. And so anytime that you can use those websites, you can actually build up your fan base, and you can do certain things that, you know, because it really depends on numbers. In order to get a deal, it really will depend on your numbers, what kind of deal you'll get. If you've got, like, just, you know, a couple of thousand people following you as opposed to a million people following, that drastically changes the numbers on the deal or whatever. So it is very good to use these, these SoundCloud websites and SoundClick and YouTube and Twitter and Instagram to pretty much build up your following. So I mean, it's very beneficial. But it's also beneficial as well to get, a major executive to listen to your record too. But they're going to look at it from that perspective, if that makes sense. Because, you know, they're looking for, you know, it roughly takes about $2 million to put into an artist. And so they want to make sure that's an investment, so they want to make sure they're going to get their money back. So if they see you with a huge fan base that is growing continually, people are coming out to buy your stuff, you know, everybody says they're hot, you know, but the audience is a judge at the end of the day. And so, you know, I get that all day. So, you know, but the audience is a judge. Are you going out to buy your stuff? Are people showing up? Are you selling out the shows that you're doing? Or do you have a song on the radio? I mean, you know, things like that play you have to be pretty much clicking on all cylinders to be a superstar. So, you know, you have to use that to your advantage, especially if you don't have the numbers to where a major label will take a look at you, because they won't even entertain the idea of a meeting with you unless they see some high-end numbers or you're just super amazing, you know, and I haven't seen that in a long time. So,
I've had a unique experience with SoundCloud. I think it must have been about 6 months ago. I got a request from some friends over at BMG to do a song for a commercial for ESPN. And it was kind of like a sound-alike song. It sounded like something that, you know, they showed me what they were looking for, and they wanted me to get close to it. So I presented it to them. They gave it to a couple other people, and we all gave them their content. I mean, their content that they asked for. And when we got it to them, they came back and said, oh, this is already filled. And I said, it's filled. Okay, well, who got it? They said, well, they went and got something off of SoundCloud. I'm like, SoundCloud? Well, what was the budget for this thing? They said, oh, it was about $20,000. I was like, $20,000? So what did they pay for the track?
Right.
It was like somewhere between $200 and $2,000. And I was thinking to myself, oh, my gosh, the game is like, this is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, no patience. No patience.
Yeah, no patience. So they're going to SoundCloud. They're undercutting. And what I want
in a microwave society.
That must be mad money mail. What's up, brother?
That's right, brother.
How y'all doing, man?
Yeah.
That's mad money mail over there, definitely. You know, this is what it's about. We got to do this roundtable talk. And it's, I think, personally, they're cheapening the product and they're cheapening
most definitely
the work.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No question about
absolutely
it.
Yeah. They have to be an entrance point so that they don't devalue the product so much that nobody's making any money anymore. It's because it's losing value because these guys are coming in and just undercutting everything, and that tears the entire game apart.
Yeah,
messing up.
I agree totally.
I'm sorry, Donna. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying that I agree totally. You know.
Yeah. The crazy thing, Matt, is that the record companies were not ready for it when the internet hit. So that was crazy.
No,
they weren't
right
ready for it.
That's right. Very
because
true.
They made, you know, 98% of their profit off of record sales, and they would give you everything. And since then, you know, of course, everything has changed. Now you got 360 deals because they have to cut into everything that you're doing to pretty much compensate for, for
all
the lack
all the shortcomings that they have. Yeah, lack of revenue.
For being unprepared. Exactly. So it's just nuts, man. It's nuts, you know.
Okay, when I come back, we come back from this drop, we're going to definitely stay live with us. I'm going to do this drop, do a station ID. We come back, I definitely want to talk about how do you get your stuff? How do you deal with these guys who are selling music online? Like, you know, you go and pay $5 for this beat, and then, you know, we deal with the publishing side of that. And then you find out some of your stuff, and I know some of you guys have had this situation, your material was involved in something somebody sold, and you're getting nothing. Be right back, you guys. It's Culture Zine Radio, where urban culture lives inside the game.
Hey, yo, peace. This is the son of Bambada, Africa Islam, representing the Universal Zulu Nation. Yo, inside the game, you know, Culture Zine Radio, where urban lives. Remember what I said, Africa Islam, son of Bambada, Universal Zulu Nation. Inside the game, Culture Zine Radio, to my man Shati, who's doing it all. Yo, from Bronx to Bangkok, from Bangkok to Berlin, back to Culture Zine, Africa Islam. Peace to my man Ice-T, peace to my father Bambada. I'm out, baby. Peace.
Welcome back to Culture Zine Radio with my very special guest here. You guys are giving some information. Let's talk about that. These royalty things that are not really getting the information to these kids, and getting these royalty situations are becoming really cutthroat because these guys are selling this music online. They haven't went through the proper channels, as Mr. Robinson would say. They haven't went through the proper channels, but yet it still cuts into your dollars. How do you guys feel about these things? Hello?
I don't know where everybody else is.
I would say, you know, you hey, it's part of the game. If you have a person who is willing to pay $50 for a track and they're willing to know that there's 20,000 other people paid $50 for the track and they're willing to say, this is my song and bring it to you as an A&R person, and the A&R person looks at it, it's obvious that's where your learning point is. Everyone has to learn. So they've screwed up the game by putting that in play. So, you know, I had a kid come to me the other day, like, where did you get that sound? It's like, right here. And it's like, but where did you get it? And it's like, I played that shit. And that's where we're losing it, gentlemen. You know what I mean? I played that, young man. I didn't get that from nobody's sample library. I am the sample library. You know what I mean? And so we got to, it's up to A&R cast to get back to the real songwriters, get the game back in the place where it's supposed to be, and make this thing happen.
Well, let me tell you where I think it started. Now, first of all, you know, you hear a lot about all the artists, and I get this all the time. You know, I'm going independent. They make it seem like that's just something that they wanted to do. That's just what the direction was, but that's not true. Truth is that the labels wasn't looking at you. You don't have enough money. You don't have enough numbers, so you have no choice but to go independent. Mm-hmm. Problem with that is it cuts the producers and the writers out because of the fact that, remember, the thing that's been going crazy that's been blowing up everybody is mixtapes. So you can take a producer's track and you can rap over it or sing over it. You don't have to pay nothing, long as it's nonprofit. So the producer doesn't get paid, the writer doesn't get paid, and somebody like Drake will, you know, go ahead, this is how he started, you know, just started doing a lot of mixtapes over different people's beats or whatever, and he didn't have to pay nobody in the beginning. And so that's where it started dumbing down the music. So you get a lot of mad producers and this and that or whatever, because there's nothing really they can do about it, because as long as it's nonprofit and the artist is just using it to build their fan base, create their buzz, you know, there can be no lawsuit anymore. But at the same time, now the music is not paid for. Everybody's already heard it. You can't bring it up. You know what I mean? And some of the guys, you know, best work and stuff like that. And so I think that's where a lot of the, you know, so, and think about it, everybody does mixtapes now. Everybody, singers, everybody does mixtapes.
That's what screwed up the game, though, Rashad, because.
Exactly my point.
When I hear 50 say, yo, this is my mixtape, this the shit, my other stuff that the corporate thing is watered down. But see, that corporate thing is paying for your pension. This fucking mixtape don't do nothing to get you a few dollars right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that your children are being paid off those dollars. So the mixtape screwed all of that up. And it's really time for us to get back to the real deal, the songwriter, because that's where the entity happens. See, imagine this.
Wait a minute. Say that again, brother. Say that again, please. Say that.
That is where the entity lies, is with the songwriter. If you have killed R&B, but all rap is samples of R&B, and there's no more new R&B to sample, so what are we doing? We basically cut off the bloodline, bruh.
Right.
We cut off the bloodline.
Right.
So what do we have to do next? We got to sample. Next, we got
to
sample.
How do we get back to that?
How
do we get back to that? That's what you want to ask us to hold on. Hold on, guys. Y'all over talking to sister.
Rashad, Livio, sign a real songwriter. Sign real songwriters. That's all. Stop fucking around with them samplers. I love Pharrell, but that nigga don't know a 12-bar blues chord. He don't know the 12-bar blues run. So I have a problem with that.
Ouch.
I got a 22-year-old who will run circles around half these guys.
No, I understand what he's saying, because he's right, because if you listen to the tape that was released, he was trying to explain blues break, and he sounded like, you know, he sounded like somebody was beating him in the back of the head because he didn't know the answers. But y'all was over talking to sister, so I wanted to definitely break in and let Ev talk a little bit. You got to get a little stronger around here, sister. These are dudes.
I just wanted to say, as a songwriter, you know, when I hate for me to hear that, because I know it, what he's saying is so true. And it's like reality is just, you know, it hits me in the face, because – you know, we want to write those records. We want to get back in and go get with the artists to start writing those records from scratch. And just, you know, those we want to get back to that, but it's so hard. And it's like, how do we get it back to it being about the songwriters and the songs and, you know, making these artists? How do we get back to that?
Well, my take
live long enough for them fools to run out of samples.
No. My take is, okay, first of all, the world is evolving. Okay, that's the first thing you got to understand. I'm old school. I'm Marvin Gaye. I'm 70s baby, everything. So, you know, I love real music, you know, and the stuff that's out is what's out. The world is evolving. This is what the kids are listening to. The problem is the kids are the ones that are buying. Kids and women are the people that pay for music. And so the labels pretty much, they have to cater to that crowd. They have to cater there. It's unfortunate because now what it does is puts the kids in power of what's good music and what's not. And how are you going to know what good music is if you're 12 years old? You only care about, you know, you only think about what your high school friends are doing and what they're bouncing to, and they're bouncing to stuff like Do the Ducky and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Just crazy stuff that we would laugh at, you know. But so what you have to do to cure that problem is, now, the labels put the money behind the artists, and so they get to push whatever they want to push. So if you get some real songwriters and you get some of these featured artists to start featuring with some real songwriters and some real producers, and trust me, it's going back. Music always does a turn. It always does a circle. One minute the dude that can dance is really in. Then one minute the big fat girl that can really sing is in. And then just the group that all they do is take off their shirt, can't sing a lick, is in. It just always does a circle. And somewhere we got stuck. No disrespect, but we got stuck in the South. And that's not wrong. South makes great music. But we got stuck there because it used to go from New York, it used to go to the West Coast, it used to come down to the South and come back up to the Midwest and the East Coast, and always did a circle. So it always kept a fresh flow of music coming in. But somewhere we got stuck in the South for about 10, 15 years. And now you got rappers and music and people that are from New York and the West Coast doing Southern music. And it just kind of came and it made the whole thing kind of stagnated. Not a problem. The South makes great music. But we shouldn't have been stuck there. We should have always do the circle. Now music is starting to do the circle again because people are tired of hearing the same thing. Believe it or not, even the kids, they're tired. That's why people like Miguel that's coming out and he has like real R&B kind of stuff. Well, not real R&B, it's not like movie, man. But it's good. It's good music. It feels a lot better than what we were. It feels a lot better than what we were listening to, you know. And so, you know, and that's why. And you can see the response from it because, you know, you can feel it. Music is supposed to provoke emotion. It's supposed to provoke emotion. It's supposed to feel something. Not just jump up on the bar, shake your booty. You know what I'm saying? And you know, and twerk and get drunk and smoke weed and that's it. That's not what music's about. You know. So. So to kill that, whoever has the money has to put that music, that money behind real good music. If you keep it out there, you market it out there, it'll catch on. And once it catches on, we could throw a new Jodeci group out right now. If we put $2 million behind them, they'll pop. They'll pop because you just have to put the money behind the artists. But if you keep putting, you know, if you keep putting money behind, you know, and no disrespect, people like Rich Homie Quan and just the rappers and the different things, well, then that's what's going to pop. That's what's going to influence the kids, and that's what's going to influence them to come in and pay. And so we have to put the money behind real artists again, and it'll change.
Yeah, you know, I have to say this because me and Melz have this conversation, and me and Ebony always talk about this. And I know that me and Alonzo talk about real music making a change, and it starts with what you just said. The labels have to step out and say, we're the adults. We're going to actually put real music out. Right. We're going to really put real music out. And that's hard.
Right. And you know, and it's Alonzo. And another thing, too, man, these A&R guys at these labels, they've got to take some risk. Okay? You know, well, just sitting back going with the status quo. You know what I mean? They've got to take some risk. And I know quite a few of the A&R guys. And, you know, a lot of them just go from the suburbs, you know, to go home, and they hardly. I used to see them in clubs all the time because I was a club cat. That's how I found most of my hot writers is going to the clubs and being in the scene. You know, I don't even know if they're even doing the scene no more. I don't even know if they're going to the spots that are hot looking for new talent. You know what I'm saying?
You but they remember when used to have an ASCAP showcase? Edna used to have an ASCAP showcase.
Yeah, I did
Lonzo.
That. That was me. Yeah, I did that.
Yes, sir. Beautiful.
That was Lonzo doing all that.
That's what I'm saying.
You got to remember they cut the A&Rs out. They cut the A&R. It's a popularity contest. They cut the A&R departments out. So what they, you know, you gotta
you know
have
what, you know what? No, they cut black. They cut black A and R departments out.
There you
I
go.
Still have white students that are doing A and R.
Tell the truth. That's right. They didn't cut the white A and R. They did go after the black, and they only give 360 to black artists. They don't give them the white artists.
Absolutely.
I was in Nashville 2 weeks ago. And I ran into three A&R guys. They got to be in their 50s. They still doing country A&R, and they still signing, and they still putting out records. And you look at the music of country, it has not changed. It's still still doing 65 down Nashville Freeway. It ain't never changed.
Beautifully said.
That is extremely beautifully said. I give you that.
Thank you. And we look at our music, and there ain't no more of us in there because they cut backdoor deals. They got cats that want to. They want to put on their records, but you got to pay the cats to be on the record. Then they want you to use their studio so they can double. They can double bill the record company. I mean, come on.
Right.
We, you know, we cutting our own throats. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But these A&R guys have got to take some risks.
I was listening to,
I listened
to a lot of music, got millions of emails and stuff like that, and I listened to the music that we were putting out, and then I listened to Justin Timberlake's album. He's still singing about love and honor and beautiful and baby, I'll be there for you, and then I turn on our music, and it's popping like, drop it, swing it, let me see it.
Sure, homie Gucci's a 6'4".
If I give you a song like that, hold on guys, one at a time.
That was the issue with the Tyrese album where he was, you know, upset that Ryan Seacrest wouldn't play him. Nobody would play his records.
Because they're
going to
say, if we do that, they're going to say it's dated.
Because, we've accepted the Macklemores, we've accepted the Justin Timberlakes as our music. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So why should they play our music when we've already accepted their music? You know
I agree.
Because I know them and I love them all. My thing is,
let's get back to what we do.
We don't take risk in our own music. We don't want to sign the things. You know, like Tyrese got out there and worked his own record. You know what I mean? I love Tyrese.
Mm-hmm.
I signed Tyrese to ASCAP when he did the Coca-Cola commercial. So I've seen his whole career. So what I'm saying is, we've got to get back to that risk taking that we used to take in the early 90s, the late 80s and the early 90s, all the way up to 2000. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We don't do that no more. Everybody wants to buy that hot record. Pushing companies are not developing songwriters anymore. They're buying songs, okay? We know who they are. And we need to get back to that. We need to get back to that whole creative. I know they got these writing camps, and I applaud my brothers that are doing them. But you know, we don't talk about that enough. We don't advertise that. We don't say this song came from a songwriting camp.
They don't want us to talk about it.
But you know what else we don't have? We don't have a format where we can talk about it though. We don't have a format where we can talk. You know, cats like Lonzo and them. I remember this. This is a fact, and most of y'all know this. Lonzo was the guy that put together these damn symposiums for writers and producers to sit down and have these conversations.
Hey, man, look, they didn't want to do them anymore. They didn't want to do them. I went to them, and I told them, this is what we got to do. This is what the community's calling for. I know my community. You know, see, my whole thing is we get in these positions, and all of a sudden, you know, we in these positions because they look at us and say, hey, look, you know, this is your community. You know, tell us what we need to be doing because we want to serve this community. We got to speak up and tell them what it is. And, you know, the showcase at Sims, and thank you so much, brother, for that. But, you know, they didn't want to do those. They didn't want to pay for those, you know. But I pushed it so hard, and I went every day, and I started charging stuff, you know, on my card to say, well, what was this? And who was this? And I started showing them, you know, on pen and paper, you know, this is what is happening from, you know, my monthly report. You know, we have to do monthly reports back in the day, and I did a monthly report, and I was turning 10 pages. Everybody else be turning in 1 and 2 pages. I'll be turning in 10 pages. They're like, what is this? I'm like, this is the people that, you know, almost dragging the president of the company saying, come with me. Let me show you. You know what I mean? He started reading my reports and like, is this what's really going on? I'm like, yeah. He said, how much you need? I told him how much I needed, and then he funded me for a whole year. And it became an every year thing after that. But, you know, you have to go out there and you have to fight for those things. You have to make them understand. Mm-hmm. They're not going to come to where we come. I mean, look, you know, and anybody on the phone, If these ones say invite you to their house and you're going to their house for dinner, they're not that much into you. They like you for what you do, but they're not trying to be your friend and family.
You know what, brother?
They got you there.
Alonzo,
they got you there in a
fetal
position.
Absolutely.
Alonzo,
got
man.
Got you there in a fetal position.
You know,
the president of the company never invited me to his house, not never invited me to mine. So whenever we sit down and had lunch or had something to eat over or talk about, he was always there. He was listening. And that's what you have to do. If you guys get these positions,
yeah.
and all of a sudden they think it's about them instead of what they're trying
man.
To do. You know what I'm saying?
Man,
and that's the problem in itself.
You know what
I
come out of
the ASCAP, bro. I was with BMI, man. Listen, excuse me, y'all. Lonzo, man.
Okay.
I fucks with
okay.
you, bro, man. You, let me tell you something, brother. This is Mad Money Mel, bro. Let me tell you something. Most every A&R man that ever said no to me, I have more money than he has.
Yeah.
Okay?
And that is the reason. And you know what? And if he didn't say no to you, it's because he couldn't say no to you. And maybe let me get back to you because he can't say yes to you. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I tell young people today in the music business. If a motherfucker can't tell you no, he cannot tell you yes either.
He can't tell
okay.
you yet.
Now, he'll maybe, let me get back to you, let me think about it, you know, I'll get back to you. If you hear a lot of that, it's because he doesn't want you to know that he can't do anything, you know what I'm saying? And you know, because he doesn't want to lose that little bit of power that he does have, because at the end of the day, he doesn't sign the check, you know what I mean? He may sign the act, he may work on the record, but at the end of the day, he's got to fly that shit up the pole and see if it'll stick.
Right. And it wasn't until
Clarence Avon sat down with me, the man who signed the check, that's when shit
right.
started happening.
And
everybody
and
else
exactly
was talking
that
exactly. Clarence signed the check, bro.
One,
yeah.
one thing that I learned,
and that's when it starts to happen. So all the young people on here, you know what I mean, we say this to, encourage you and make you find the right lane to go to. Don't waste your time with time wasters. You know what I'm saying? Because they will waste your time simply because that's the position they're in there to play. At the same time, too, you've got to know who they are and know their roles and get past them to the people, like my man said, Money said, can't make the check.
Right.
And if they can't come to your house, it ain't happening. If you don't go to their house, it ain't happening.
One thing that I've learned.
I mean, you know, I'm going to keep it real. It's all good with them. It's just that, you're there for a particular reason, and that's to manage that. You know what I mean? I got plenty of stories I can tell you where, you know, 300 Bloods and Crips rolled up to the ASCAP office in L.A., and I'm the first person they're looking for. You know what I mean? So, I can tell you stories. I got plenty of them.
If it's the Bloods and Crips album, I worked on the album, so I know what you're talking about, baby.
You know what I mean? You rolled up there
with Ronnie,
15 cats in black with braids in their hair and rubber bands. It's like, okay, first thing they're doing is hold up. Let me go get the guy. You know, it's just like, why I got to be the guy? Why can't the guy, what I'm to the other guy down the hall, do the same thing? That's a white guy. He can't do it. You know what I mean? It's like, okay. I mean, you know, it's funny, but y'all know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. You got something to say, sister?
No. I mean, I agree.
I think you got almost kind of a Warren Buffett attitude where you're kind of diversifying in order to actually survive. So you got to do a little bit of this booty shaking music so you can make that money and invest it in real music. You know what I mean? It's like you got to, I hate to say dumb it down, but, you know, I'm a classically trained musician. I can analyze Stravinsky and Beethoven and all those guys. I understand that stuff. But all cats are asking for is just beats. You know what I'm saying? So I'm dumbing it down every day, you know, to just do beats. But, you know,
Morgan's
got to
get paid.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly
Morgan's
what I'm saying.
Get paid. Kids got to eat every day. You're right.
Let me tell you, the rubber meets the road. That's a lot of the problem. You know what I'm saying? You know, I haven't seen The Who or Chicago yet do one booty shaking song. You know what I'm saying?
They don't have to, though. Their fan base is
exactly. No, they don't have to. But, it's like it all falls on us to do that type of music. And then, you know, we left with what's left over. And it's like, I don't know.
I believe that right now what Rashad said was the involvement of this.
Hold on, y'all. Hold on. Livio's on the line right now. Hold on, guys. I want to definitely get this in. Okay, go ahead and finish talking. We'll call back. I have to ask you guys this. In writing songs, and I want to direct this at everybody, in writing songs, when you're writing on a specific subject, right, and you're creating this product, what do you feel about the new digital outlets compared to having to go to the labels and having to do it the way that you had to do it? I know how Rashad feels about, you know, no one wants to be independent, but sometimes you have to be because the labels aren't hearing independent. They're only hearing Lil Wayne. No disrespect to Lil Wayne. They're only hearing Nicki Minaj. They're not hearing, you know, new R&B. And I had this conversation with a London DJ today, and he said, well, you know, no one wants to hear black kids singing R&B. I go, but so you think they really want to hear Adele? Who everything she does is all black music? And he had to shut up and go, you're right, dude. Everything that you – I said, let me finish this. I said, you guys have to understand that the rhythm music that you guys say black people don't want to – you know, you guys don't want to see black people doing, you've been trying to do since before Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis. This is music that you have to deal with, and you can no longer eradicate the black R&B artists or the black live artists and expect to only sell white urban music to contemporary urban people. Music is colorless and genderless, but you can't grow a branch off a tree. If the branch breaks off the tree, expect that to become a tree. It's not going to happen.
Well, I think, like I was trying to say, this is the whole issue. And I think, you know, we all have some very valid points. And, you know, the thing about it is that it really has nothing to do with the A&Rs and all that stuff. Let me tell you what it really is. In this music business, it's power and control, period. If you got the money, you got the power.
Got the power. You got
power, you got the control. All this guy ain't doing this, he ain't came up, he working with somebody, that has nothing to do with it. You power and control is the name of this. If not, you're a slave. You're a slave. And so you'll spend your time pointing at somebody that didn't help you or do anything that you needed him to do, as opposed to getting power and control. Mm-hmm. I have been maneuvering myself. I had to do what I had to do to get in there to get my own company to where now I have the power and the control. But it takes a second. To build an empire, it's a process. And as long as we start to build the power and the control, they have the money, so they control everything. See, they got smart when the internet and all that crazy stuff is, because when they weren't ready. So what they did is they decided to start buying up all the radio stations. They decided to buy up all the interviews and magazines, every outlet that you would need to become successful, all the marketing PR firms. So now they control everything. So when you want to be an artist, you got to go through them. There's four distribution companies, there's major distribution: Sony, Warner, Universal, and Atlantic. And they pretty much run everything. Anything that you want to do on a major scale, you have to go through them. They bought up everything. It's about power and control. They don't care about
the
money.
American companies.
Let me explain to how this thing works. Have you ever heard a song on the radio that you couldn't stand? It was just terrible the first time you heard it. You was like, that shit is whack. But they kept playing it and playing it. And about 5 o'clock, you stuck in traffic, and you heard it for the 20th time. You find yourself bobbing your head to it. That's called power and control. They keep playing it until you like it. They do. They put out whatever they want to put out until they push it on you until you like it. Half of that music out, it's terrible. It's terrible. It ain't like what Melvin do. It ain't like what we used to. But they keep playing it and playing it because they own the radio, they own the TV station, and they own everything, and they tell you what you're going to like. Tell you what you're going to like because they keep pushing it on you. It has nothing to do with an A&R guy. It has nothing to do with a producer. It has nothing to do with a writer. I own everything. You're going to do what I tell you to do. I'm going to tell you what your happiness is. I'm going to tell you that your happiness is getting a two-car garage with a picket fence, because I keep putting that on the TV. I keep putting it on there that you see it, and now you think that that's your happiness. But you don't even care about that stuff. Power and control, period.
I agree.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. You got the money, you got the power, you got the money, you got control. You can do whatever you want to do. I can take Shaki right now and make him a singer. If I keep pushing Shaki, put $2 million behind him and tell the radio station, look, here, here's $100,000. Put Shaki in rotation 20 times a day. You think he's going to turn down that check? Absolutely not. So Shaki's 20 times a day. You can't stand him the first 7 times you heard him. You can't stand him the first 10 times you heard him. But now you're stuck in traffic, and it's the only thing that's coming on the radio station. And guess what? 19 times, you find yourself on the 19th time bobbing your head. What does that feel bad?
Well, shit, Rick, sir, call me tomorrow. I can get 100 by Monday afternoon. Shit. I have 100,000 Monday afternoon. I'm serious, nigga. I will have 100,000 Monday afternoon. Did you hear what I just said? You do that shit. I don't know the motherfuckers that can do that. So if you got the motherfucker to do it for 100,000, nigga, I got 100,000 Monday afternoon.
Right.
And three weeks later, I got another 100,000 coming. I just don't know who to give it to, and I'm not giving that money to anybody because I end up in jail. So if you know the people that I can give it to that will make it happen, you call me. And we'll do
right
that.
Right now, what I'm doing, man, and Shaki knows what I'm doing. I'm doing my own talent search show. I'm doing my own production company. I'm doing my own movies. I'm putting myself in position. Yeah, I work for Universal. Yeah, I do this and I do that, and I work for these labels and all this stuff, and I'm very good at what I do. Okay? I'm very good at seeing stars before they're stars and hearing hit records before they hit records. That's wonderful. But the truth is, I still have to answer to somebody sometime. But not in my
That's
company,
right.
I don't. But not my company, I don't. And so, you know what I mean? And so I'm just, all I'm doing is positioning myself. And then you got to think about the people that they're hiring. They're hiring guys, nerds, that are coming out of school with BAs and stuff like that. They don't know good music. They don't know what we know, man.
Our guys,
they don't know us.
Let's be real.
Right,
let's
right.
be real. We
right.
go back enough where the A&R guys were actually producers and songwriters and you know, that
I came up on the Norman Whitfield, motherfucker Benny Medina, motherfuckers who was real with it. And see,
right,
Benny Medina was like a
turtle. Because they were writers and producers themselves. Right, because they were writers and producers and creators.
Yeah.
Now you have bean counters.
You know what I used to call Benny? I used to call Benny like a turtle. See, he's a motherfucker with a hard outside, soft inside, and willing to stick his motherfucking neck out.
Yep.
Yeah,
he stuck his neck out for me quite a few times.
Yes, sir. And see, they ain't got guys. And see, that's what turns companies around. Mo Austin told him, don't sign. Lonzo, you know, Mo Austin told him, don't sign J. King with Timex Social Club. He signed that shit and blew that saved the company.
Yep. Right.
Saved the fucking company, man. Because he took a chance, bro.
Right.
It's the little guy who takes the chance. If the big guy doesn't have to take a chance. He's already in a position. He does something. If it messes up, so what? But it's the little guy. It's the guys like a brother I knew back in the day named Guy Abrams, cats like that, A&R guys, A&R guys who would stick their neck out and give you a budget.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But see, that's touchy, though, Mel, because of the fact that, first of all, as an A&R, you ain't got too much room for error. Your mistakes cost
money. No, you don't.
So the combination of not knowing if it's going to hit or not, your job on the line, and you know, I don't really believe in the project. And so would you stick your neck out for that? Would you stick your neck out for something you don't believe in or something that because you don't have no room for error. If you put somebody out and you vouch for him and you go upstairs and I go up here and I say, listen, he's good for this, you know, give him $2 million. They say, okay, they cut the check, $2 million, he come out and flop. Well, guess what? Guess who gets fired? And how many $150,000 a year jobs or $200,000 a year jobs do you think that's out there? Especially exactly, period.
Yeah.
When I was an A&R and stuff, I got to really believe in the project. I give you a thorough. I got to make sure that, you know, you ain't hanging with some knuckleheads. I got to make sure, you know, because all that stuff plays into a factor. I have had to kill 5 people's deals just on the way they talk to me. Talk to me like I work for them because they watch too much TV. Nigga, who you talking to? I don't work for you.
Watch this, bro. This is where we have to, like I said, we measure twice, cut once. Because, you see, when you got to do the evaluation, you got to understand the pedigree in which you're dealing with now. A true artist is an artist. All that other stuff, they don't even care about. Like,
Hold on, guys. I know you got to go, Ab. I want to thank you for coming on the show. I want to thank you for being a part. We have to do just me and you conversation and playing all your music of all the stuff you've done. I appreciate it. You know, I love you. You're my sister. So definitely give me a call tomorrow. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you guys so much.
All right.
See
you later, sister.
Listening to all of you. It was a pleasure. It really was.
Okay. Thanks, sister.
Take care.
God bless.
You'll be hearing from me, each and every one of you.
Ma'am.
So don't act like you don't know me.
Okay.
It's all good. You family.
You get all my numbers.
Yes, ma'am.
Give me a call.
Yes, ma'am.
I definitely for you numbers, man. This is a phenomenal sister and a phenomenal writer. So,
amen.
Yeah,
amen.
We definitely need to talk. I'm going to call you tomorrow, baby, all right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Peace and blessings to all of you. Good night. Bye.
Good night.
Good night, darling. So, yeah, man. So, guys, if we want to change something, we got to actually change it. We got to have the money behind us. We got to, and this goes back to that same thing, you know, put money into your own community. Put money into your own thing, you know, and that's the problem, especially with the urban music. You know, the problem is, brother, you know, if you look at Justin Bieber and all kind of other races, and I'm not saying this to be racist or nothing like that, but they support the artists. If a white dude come out, you're going to have a bunch of white dudes, you know, a bunch of white people supporting this project. You have a Mexican guy come out or a Hispanic person, they're going to support their artists, you know. Anybody overseas and stuff like that. We are the only people that don't support each other because of the fact that, first of all, we're so talented as a people, it's very hard to impress us. That's the first thing. Second of all, we just don't support each other. We don't.
Well, some of those issues go back to farther than music.
Yes,
it goes back to our culture
and those things.
And
so they play us against each other. Play us against each other.
Of course. That goes back to a deeper conversation that we know we all can have and we all can speak on. I want to definitely say this. I want to do this again. I want to have this conversation. Once a month, I want to do a roundtable about urban culture and urban music and where we're going to go.
Good.
And I definitely invite you guys to come out and talk. Hopefully, I can get you guys to call in on the 12th. We're going to be celebrating 42 years of hip-hop. So we're going to have a panel with a lot of different hip-hop artists yesterday, today, and hopefully tomorrow. I got Ears and a whole lot of other people coming on, and we're talking. And I want y'all to come on. I want y'all to talk. This is a format in which I created along with my partner and my program director, Ed Waterford. We're doing 3 or 4 different network channels, and I'm doing a channel with my brother over there, Rashawn. We're trying to create what we don't have. So we got to think about where we're going to go, what we're going to do. So with brothers like you guys and that sister that just left and all of the people that have been on this network I'm very appreciative of, we got to find a way to cut through the drama. We are like the lost children of Israel, wandering for 40 years now.
Right.
We've got to find a way to get back on the path. And I'm going to put it on us to say, if we weren't the movers and shakers when this all went to hell, but now we've gained the information, the knowledge, and some of us have got to take a lead and shake some of that BS off and say, where do we go from here? Because the reality is, if we don't change, urban music won't be anymore.
Yeah,
it will be.
Well, watch this.
They'll do urban music what they've been trying to do for the last 50 years.
Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
They've been trying to change it and control it. So they can't control what we do digitally. We've got to come up with some plans. Lonzo, I definitely want to talk to you because I want to let you guys go out and tell what you guys are doing. Symposium type stuff.
Yeah, let me jump in real quick. This is Lonzo. So hip-hop is 42 years old. Okay, so hip-hop has had a couple kids now. We need to talk about what these new kids are doing. You know what I'm saying? In hip hop.
Right.
And it was an art form that was created to, you know, voice the opinions of, you know, us on the street, us to the world, letting people know that things are happening good and bad in the community. Now we got to work. Now what we got to talk about is the, you know, is the kids of hip hop. What are we going to teach them? What are we going to do for that next generation coming in? Because it looks like, you know, we got Bebe's kids out here right now. You know what I'm saying?
And we got to pull them back in.
You know what I'm saying? And we got to touch them. We got to touch them and let them know that where they're taking it is not where it was meant to go.
And that's the whole reason for that. That's why we're doing that thing on the 12th. We're
right
doing
now.
That round table, and we need you guys to come and talk to these guys.
Absolutely.
Sit down,
you know,
and talk
thing,
and have these conversations.
Right, and the funny thing that
you
say that, bro,
to you.
Hold on real quick. Just give me 1 second. Everything that you said, Alonzo, was wonderful, and everything that you say. And guess what? It's all connected to the music. The music speaks to everything, the community, to the suburbs, everything. All we got to do is get behind it, put a bunch of money behind it, and go ahead and take it back to what it's supposed to be. That's all we got to do. That's all we got
now,
to do.
But that,
I want to
close with a brand new business model.
I want to close with you guys on something. See, this brand new business model that you're speaking of, brother, I own that. I have him on the phone right now, and he will sit there right in, stand in front of any one of these motherfuckers and not just play the guitar and rap with them. He will bite it and eat it and lay on the ground like Hendrix did and never miss a note.
Is that my
and
nephew?
The idea is not to worry about any of that monkey business. You have to infiltrate now the same way that you see what you're saying to me that Justin Timberlake and all of them doing. See, I'm doing to them. I got their kids.
Exactly. Thank you, my brother.
Doing what I got their
Elvis
kids.
Had no problem ripping us off, and now we got to do the same thing to them they did to us.
And see, the biggest thing that brought hip-hop to the forefront was when Run DMC and Errol Smith got together.
Yep.
That's true.
Made
MTV,
that's
you're
what
right.
Okay,
well, that's
now,
the first major
imagine I done put Run and D on some instruments. Okay, and now you can say, oh, this and that. Well, shit, nigga said Eazy-E couldn't rap. But now this nigga's singing and rapping and doing all this stuff, and it only gets better, as we all know.
He's only 21. I give you credit. That's my nephew. That boy is a monster, and he's only 21. Is he on the phone?
And you have to see the live performance to understand the validity. See, you know, got everybody talking shit. You see, I say, come out to the Whiskey, come out to the Rainbow, come out to the Viper Room. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm not talking about the clubs down in South Central, bro. I'm talking about come to the Sunset Strip with Slash and Lemmy from Motorhead, where Scott Ian from Anthrax, where Todd Singerman, who managed all of them, Jamie Adler and all of them are going to say, that's my guy. If you go up Sunset Boulevard and say, yo, that Jimi Hendrix kid. They'll say, yeah, the kid who eats a guitar. Any club you go to there. Jamie Adler's guy, the guy who eats a guitar out. I've dated Slash's mom for 5 years, bro. When the rock community see me walk in, they know what time it is, baby. This is not, it's not about just hip-hop anymore. It's music. And it's time to tear down those fences that we've been put in. See, those fences and genres has made it so that, like what you said with Justin, Justin Timberlake do the song, well, I know a guy who sings as good as Michael Jackson. Well, he do the song and take it to the A&R. They say, well, it's dated, son. You know, go give me some T.I. So,
well, that's why I say we got to do urban music. It's not about a genre because all of it, blues, jazz, funk, rock, gospel, all of it is urban music. And we have to start thinking about our music like a gumbo instead of some goulash. You know, people throw music, people throw things together and they say, oh, it's all one pot. But we all grew up in one pot families where we put the pot in the middle and everybody ate out the pot. But we ate gumbo. We ate stuff that had flavor. We didn't eat it all and it all mushed together. So why is our music like that? That's not where we come from. So we have to change that.
What happened is this. We have sample libraries. We have brothers who are not playing they shit. They grabbing it from this library, that library, and that library because it's mixed. It sounds good immediately, boom, boom, boom. And that is what our problem is because, see, now
those are the fences and barriers that you're speaking of. You're wondering why. It's because the brother on the line that just said that, well, I can do Mozart, I can do, they're not letting him produce Drake record or
Warrior. Yeah, my brother. He plays like 30-some instruments, yeah.
You understand me? They're not letting him do the record. And so what happens is you got a guy who's limited to this library that he has, when this brother here is a walking library.
Well, see, that's why we have to start doing combinations and not just looking at one or two artists to come save the whole genre. It's never worked that way. It's never happened.
Listen, gentlemen,
it's
not
one artist. We got to do it as a whole, as a family.
Well,
you know, you sit there and say we
got
a problem.
Man, I got the money. If I ain't got it, I can make Carl get the shit in 15.
Yeah, but it's more than that, and we
got to
go. We got to start letting everybody give their info contact information because this is more than a one part show. What I want to do is we've got to control the data, not just the creation. We've controlled the information for years. We've controlled the creation for years. What we haven't controlled is the distribution of the data, nor of the network. So what I did is I said, look, black radio is dead. Black television is okay, but it's not moving like we need. So for pennies on a dollar, I sat down with all of you brothers and I had this discussion. And I said, we can do this. I'm not trying to say I'm trying to do anything. I'm just saying that digital is a way for us to not have to be master's bitch.
Come on, sir. Come on, sir. You're preaching now. That's what I'm talking about.
You understand?
About.
So we've got to stop thinking like, you know, they beat us on Monday, beat us
come
on Tuesday. Sound
right.
Pretty good to me. We got to stop that. And
right.
The way we got it is
we've
got digital. They can control a lot of shit, but they can't control that digital.
We have to think corporately. We have to think about controlling our ins and outs, what comes, what
right.
We do, our product. If we just want to go an artist that's really,
and me
really
and
good,
had this conversation.
An artist that's really, really good, and we just need to push, just stop, don't care about anything else, and just go all in with him. That's small thinking. We're not going to be able
to do it all the way.
We're not going to be able to do that. We have to control the whole system, how it comes
right.
out, when it comes out, who pays for it. We pay for it. We control. We do. And we have to control every aspect of the company. We have. You cannot just talk about one artist that we need to just put all our eggs in
the
basket.
And I understand that. I understand exactly what you're saying. But in Mel's defense, I do understand this. Me and Mel have had this conversation extensively. We know the game has to be changed. We got
to
figure out, it's not one savior, who are the game changers. Right, the whole system. So my nephew is a bad mother,
uh-huh.
Period.
Oh, absolutely.
My nephew's
absolutely.
A bad boy. I agree that I'm glad that he's bridging that gap the way the Rolling Stones bridged it with Muddy Waters. He's bridging that gap back. You took it from us, and we're going to take it back to you. But at the same time, we've got to get all these other things in play because you know what, Mel? Major urban radio is not going to play this kid. And that's sad.
Right.
Hey, major TV is not going to play him.
Let
that's
me show you where
up.
We are.
That's
so we're not even worried about that. Let me show you where we are right now.
But we have to be because it has to be.
I
understand what you're saying, but we have to look
just
beyond
right now
one genre.
That right song. We're right
I understand
now,
that,
we're looking
but let
for
me
that
ask you a
right
question.
Song.
You were looking for the right song to get played on what? Because black radio's dying.
It has to, we have to control the company. We cannot, listen, yeah, you know, we can have the most amazing artists in the world, but if they don't get played or we don't have a system to put them up, it doesn't matter.
We've got
to
control that other end.
We have to control
that
other end.
So while we're still, exactly, while we're creating, and Alonzo, tell me if I'm wrong, while we're creating, we've got to control the distribution of that product when that creation is ready. Because if you're still putting that brand new creation into a machine, look here, I'm going to give you an example. What happened to Romeo Blue, as they used to call it?
I don't know. No.
You know who that is, right? Lenny Kravitz.
Oh, yeah. He was called Romeo Blue.
Right. So what happens to that beautiful artist thrown into this pressure chamber? It grinds them up.
Right.
So we have to create on the other side to say, hey, look, I know we want to run through this,
but we want to have some alternatives. The reason blues and jazz and all those things worked, if you remember, they played music at night. They had on what they call the race stations. Race records weren't played on major radio, but it still broke through. Why? Because there was a network that was willing to support it. So
Amen.
We can't just do the creation. We've got to be able to build a nation.
Right.
And we build
That's
a nation
true.
While you got creators, you got navigators, and you've got builders.
Right.
And we have to know our lanes and deal with those things.
Right.
Melvin's an awesome artist. Warrior is a beautiful artist. But they are stuck in these avenues that are not going to push them. They're going to push them to a certain extent, but they're going to always put a white artist over them to sing. And no matter how many white people you get with, this is a factor that they've been doing. You can get with, you know, whoop-de-whoop and bam-de-bam, and they say they're going to push him. And at the end of the day, go ask your boy Romeo Blue how hard they pushed him.
Think about Boyz II Men. Boyz II Men are the one of the most talented singing groups I've ever seen in my life. Crazy. Rolling on harmonies. I mean, just stupid. Sing classical, sing anything. But do you think they got more attention than New Kids on the Block or NSYNC? They could even.
New Edition, the same way. Temptation. You can go back as far as you want to.
They couldn't even hang the Boyz II Men. But they weren't having dolls and stuff made of them, selling, you know, superhero dolls. We have to control that area of it as opposed to the control. We're talented as a people. We're always going to be talented. Ain't nobody can mess with us, man. We're the most talented
people.
But
the problem is, it goes back to the foundation of this conversation, guys. Who controls our publishing? Who controls our songwriting? It's not us. Am I right, Lonzo?
Those are German companies or Italian companies, absolutely.
Right. Am I right, Lonzo? This machine isn't ours. We up create, but
it's not
ours.
An American machine.
We have to go in and figure this out. And all I'm saying is we have the collective brain power, to make all of these things work. And the way we do it is work with each other, not against each other. That whole house nigga, field nigga, slave mentality that they do to us, not saying this is what this conversation is about, but they pit us against each other, and there can only be one. That whole, there can only be one. Me and you had this conversation this morning, Mel. There can only be one bullshit. We got to stop that. And no one's going to stop that but us. And I think, you know, because I want Mel on this show, I want Mel to blow up, but I want Mel to be able to have an avenue that he can't just have to stick in one corner. I want him to be an international artist. And the only way that works is if we think internationally and globally and work with those who want to work with us outside of the system to create with his brother doesn't have to be this or that. He can be everything in the world.
Shaggy, if I can suggest something.
Yes, sir.
I'm thinking of these labels. Like one of the brothers earlier, we're going from a $60 billion industry to a $6 billion industry. And,
right.
But one company is not shrinking at all, and they're actually controlling pretty much all the music. And that's Apple. And Apple's doing that
digital
distribution.
Very good point, sir.
And they did it by controlling the infrastructure. And we have to start thinking about it in an infrastructure way.
Exactly.
You know, if we don't do that, we will always be the slave.
Whoever
controls the highway controls the toll. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
What's under the highway? Fiber optics is in the highway. That's where all the data travels through. Whoever controls the highway controls everything.
Right.
So
beautiful
we've got to build
sir.
Our own highways. We absolutely
beautiful
have to take all that creativity and redirect it into building the highway. Then we can put whatever the heck we want to on it.
Beautifully said, sir.
I want you guys to give out y'all information. We got about a minute and some change.
Okay.
All right. What do you want, emails or what?
You give out your emails, fastest way to get a hold of you, because we're going to do this part two. You with me, Big Mel?
I'm with you, baby. We on this, man.
We all
right.
with it.
Young Mel is on the line.
Let's do this. What's up, MDK?
What's
I love
up,
you,
man.
Brother. You know he don't
you
talk. He like Jimmy. He don't talk. What's up, y'all?
Yeah, he don't say
so
too much.
I want y'all to give out your contact information. That's a hell of a brother right there. Actually, Warrior, you two should definitely contact. I'll give you guys numbers together. And y'all both in L.A., but you know, y'all give out, everybody give out their contact information. I definitely want to
Lonzo,
thank y'all.
You play pool?
Oh, hello?
Alonzo,
yeah.
Do you play pool? You play pool, Lonzo? Lonzo's
hey,
gone. Okay.
He might have dropped. Give out your contact information. We definitely got to go. We got about 38 seconds.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Okay, well, we're starting. You can reach me at CooleyUniversal@gmail.com, or you can call the company number at 909-258-9695.
WarriorCreations.com or WarriorCreations@gmail.com.
Love it.
Mail.
That's mkellymusicgroup@gmail.com. Mad Money Mel.
Everybody else gone? I love you, brothers. I really do.
I gotta
say, shout out to my sister,
WarriorCreationsMusic.com, guys. Warrior Creations Music or Warrior Creations Games. You can get in touch with me either one. You know.
Okay.
These brilliant brothers and that sister have definitely given me an hour and a half of their time. I want to say this. He may not come when you call, but he's always on time. We'll be black next week.
Amen.
Hit me up at Inside the Game, everything at Inside the Game, Facebook, all of that, all right? Or hit me up at Coach Zine Radio Network, all of the Facebook, all of those. You guys have a good night.
All right, you too, brother. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
Thank you for calling
God
in,
bless.
Man.
Right. Yeah, peace.